Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
March 18, 2008, a night that could possibly change his life forever. But before we begin, a reminder, the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage or the host. At this time, let me introduce to you Mr. Bobby Yates. Also on the panel tonight is Brenda Cherry and Creola Cotton. They're members of the Concerned Citizens for Racial Equality, as well as Jim Blackwell with the Tarrant County LOC. And I believe on our panel tonight we're supposed to have Sharon Reinerson, a legal aid attorney. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Mr. Yates, are you with us?
Yes, ma'am.
Why don't you tell us about the evening of March 18, 2008? How did it begin? How did this whole nightmare begin for you?
Okay. The night that it happened, I was on my couch. I used to sleep in my bedroom, but I slept on the couch that night. So anyway, later on, I heard just knock on my door, kicking. Someone was kicking and banging on my door. And they just kept banging and kicking. I just laid there for a while, thinking they were going to go away, but they never did. So they just kept on kicking and banging on my door and screaming or hollering my name. So I decided to raise up off the couch and look out my window, and I saw someone's elbow sleeve sticking out from where I could see. So I decided to get up off the couch and get in my wheelchair, and I went to the door, and I asked, I asked who is it before I answered the door. And I heard this voice saying, "This is Heather. Could you let us in?" I said, "What, Heather?" I said, "What?" She said, "Bobby, could you let us in? Could you let us in, please? Open the door." So I opened the door to see what they wanted, because they wasn't going to go away. So when I opened the door, I saw her and two guys with her. And they were telling me, like, they wanted to come in for a while, to sit for a while till her mother got home, because her mother had done left and went somewhere, and she had locked the door, and she couldn't get in. So they wanted to come to my house to sit until her mother got home. And I had second thoughts, but by me being real nice to people, so I just let them come in. But when they came in, the front door was open all the time, the whole time they were there. So all three of them sat on my couch. And Heather, she fit in the middle of them. And then we just talked for a while, I think about 10 or 15 minutes, we just sit and talk. And this thing I know, they all got up off my couch and went outside. I'm thinking when they were going outside like that, that she was going to check on her house to see if have her mother made it back. And they come back in, then they'll sit down again, then they'll spit a fruit mess, don't say anything, then they'll get back up and go back out. They did it three times, but the third time they did it, they came in the last time, they all fit on my couch, and Heather right there in the middle of them. So anyway, I know Heather, she had a brown paper bag with her, and she asked me, she said, "Bobby, could you please, bake this brownie for us, because we're kind of hungry. Would you mind?"
Yates, I'm going to interrupt you. I've just got a text that you can't really be heard very well, so can you speak up, please?
Oh, okay.
That's better.
She had a bag with her, and she asked me,
let me stop you for those that may have not heard you from what you said so far. You're
okay.
Asleep at night. On your couch, someone's banging on your door. It's like 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning,
right.
And you look out your window, and the only reason you got up was because they continued to bang. I'm understanding you correctly,
kicking in on my door, they was kicking and beating at the same time.
Okay, kicking and beating on your door. Okay, and so you got up, and so you went to the window and you saw an elbow. And,
yes.
And what happened after that? You see, you look out the door and you see an elbow. I mean, look out the window and see an elbow, and then what?
I get up off of the couch and get in my wheelchair, and I go to the door. And before I open the door up, I asked who was it, and she said it was Heather. And she just kept saying, she just kept pleading for me to let her in, And I know somebody was with her, but I didn't know who. So when I opened the door up, it was her and two guys, two of her friends. And she said to me, like, could they come in and sit for a while until her mother got home, because her mother had took the keys and she locked the door, and she couldn't get in the house. So they decided to come to my house to sit for a while. So I just let them, I let them in, you know. I didn't want to, but it was kind of raining and, you know, raining pretty hard. So I decided to let them in and sit for a while. But the whole time, when they came in my house, in my apartment, the front door was open all the time. It never was closed the whole night. So anyway, all three of them came in. They sit on my couch. Heather sits in the middle, and her two guy friends sit on the east side of her. And they were kept going, you know, like they stayed in my house for about, when they got there, they stayed in my house for about maybe 10 or 15 minutes, because we were just talking, you know, like chit-chat talking, you know, about her mother and all of that. So anyway, they decided to get up and go outside. I'm thinking all the time when they were going outside, in and out of my house, you know, in and out of my house, that she was going to check on her house to see if, you know, have my mother made it back yet. They did it three times. So anyway, the third time they came back in, they all sit on my couch this time. They didn't go back out. So I noticed Heather had a brown bag with her, a paper sack bag. And she, you know, kind of reached the bag out toward me, asked me could I, you know, make some brownies for them. And I'm a good person anyway, so I went on and did it. And I'm not no bad. I didn't turn them down. I was going to do it for them since they said they were hungry. So I went in the kitchen. I took the bag from her, and I went in the kitchen and proceeded to start, you know, making the brownies, stirring the batter. I was in my kitchen for about maybe 5 or 6 minutes. And next thing I know, Heather, she comes in the kitchen to where I was. And anyway, she stood right beside my wheelchair. And she looked at me and said, Bobby, have you ever touched a white girl before? I said, what? She said, have you ever touched a white girl before, down there before? I said, no, Heather. I said, why you ask me? By the way, you got two man friends in there. You got company in there. She said, so? They don't have to know. I'm not going to tell them. So anyway, I kind of held my hair down while I was stirring the batter. So I stopped stirring the batter. And I had one hand on the spoon that was inside the batter. You know, still, I wasn't stirring no more. And I had my left hand on the arm of my wheelchair, you know, resting on my wheelchair arm. So anyway, she got real close up on me, and she just, all of a sudden, she just grabbed my wrist, grabbed me by the wrist with two of her hands, with both of her hands, and forced my hands between her legs. And it happened so fast, I didn't have time to react to pull away from her, because it just was for about maybe 2 or 3 minutes. It happened so fast. So anyway, she let go of my hand, and she kind of backed a couple steps away from me, backed from me a little bit. And she turned around. No, she backed, then she asked me, do I have $20? I said, no, Heather, I don't have no money right now. You know, I don't have no money. And she kind of looked at me kind of funny. Then she turned around, facing my living room where her two friends were sitting. So anyway, she kind of looked that way for about a few seconds, then she looked at me again, facing me again. I'm looking at her right in the eyes. She had tears in her eyes where she had none. Forced herself to cry. Then when I saw her crying, she went back in my living room where they were sitting, and she sit right between them. By this time, I had them kind of roll back from out of the kitchen so I could see. But I couldn't hear what they were saying, but they was mumbling and whispering to each other. I didn't know what it was. So anyway, all three of them got up off the couch and went outside out in front of my apartment and stood there for a while, and they was talking. So anyway, all three of them came back in like they were in a line, one behind the other. And Mike, one name was Mike, said, Heather just got through telling him that I just got through molesting her while she was asleep. Something they just had made up. Just like that in front of my face. I said, what? He said, yeah. She just got through telling me and my, no, Jacob, that you just got through touching her while she was asleep. So anyway, they came on in closer to me, and all three of them, you know, they caught me by my wheelchair and marched me back toward the kitchen. And all the time, Heather was in the front of me. They was on the side of me. And then they started, you know, hollering at me and saying they were going to beat my motherfucking ass.
Ooh.
You know, cursing me out and all of that. And Heather was in front of me, and two male friends on the side of me. And I think Jacob or Mike said something about Heather. If I hit him, They'll take me to jail. I better not hit him. Why don't you beat his ass? Beat his motherfucking ass right now. We're gonna beat his ass. We're gonna leave him in this apartment where somebody can come find him the next day. Cause he was late. So anyway, hell, the boss up fist up and started beating me all in my face, you know. And I kind of hid my head down so she wouldn't hit me all in my eyes, cause I ain't want my eyes swelled up. And she was hitting me pretty hard. So she stopped hitting me, and then it wasn't nothing I could do. I was afraid for my life at that time. And I was there by myself. I was there by myself. Anyway, they were both on my, they was on either side of me. Then somebody, they turned me around, facing me back towards the living room, and they motioned me back to the living room.
Okay, excuse me, just a second. Somebody has noise in their background. Could you please mute the background?
Not
okay, go ahead, Bobby.
Okay. Anyway, they motioned me back to the living room, and they had their hand on my chair. You know where you push my chair? They had their hand held to my chair real tight because I was going to try to make a run to the front door because the front door was open. So they just kept their hand on my wheelchair, and then they turned me to the right of, you know, in my living room. So I couldn't, you know, have no control about what I wanted to do because I was scared for my life. You know, I had no idea what was going to happen to me that night. So they put me in the living room right there by the telephone. And they kept saying what they were going to, they were threatening to kill me there. And anyway, I make model houses. And the work that I was doing that day, I had them stop, put it on hold because I was tired. So I had a knife on the floor where I was cutting my cardboard up to make my model houses with. And I was tired of sitting up in my chair. So anyway, I got out of my chair. I asked them, could I get out of my chair and sit on the floor for a while because I was tired, you know, sitting in this hard chair. So I got out of my chair. I sat on me a pillow, and it was a pillow on the couch. I reached for that pillow so I can, you know, rest my elbows on because I can't hold my balance when I sit up straight. I'm always got to land on something since I don't have my legs. So anyway, I stayed on the floor about maybe, I sat on the floor for about maybe 5 or 6 minutes. And I got back up in my chair. I had not picked up the knife, and I put the knife under my cushion where I sit. And they kept saying what they were going to do to me, how they were going to kill me and then leave me here for somebody to find me. So anyway, about that time, I got back up in my chair. And then when they kept on threatening me, I was right by my telephone. So I picked up my telephone. And I dialed 911 real fast. And the operator answered, you know, and she said, hello, you know, something like that. Then somebody, Mike or Jacob, you know, pulled the phone out of my hand. And Mike said, we can't have the police coming here because we're all high, you know. And I skipped one part. The third time they came in, it was a time when Mike said that we just got to snort some powder. I said, some powder. Y'all do that? He said, yeah, man, we feeling good, man. And that's the part I left out when I said it came in the third time.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I talk on the phone. I was trying to talk on the phone, but somebody snatched the phone out of my hand while I was talking to the operator, 911. And pretty soon, the phone rang again, and it was 911 calling me back. So anyway, I got to telling her what was going on. I was trying to make them get out. And I was trying to make them get out before I, you know, picked up the phone. It's been so long ago, I'm trying to get it together here. But anyway, I talked to 911. She asked me what was going on. And I was telling her there were 3 people in my apartment with, you know, threatening me, you know, threatening my life. And she said, how old are they? I asked them, how old are y'all? Then that's when I found out the real ages of them. Because before this happened, Heather's mother had said that her daughter was 20. Then she said she was 21. Then 22. Then she said she was 18. And they said all this. She's telling me this right here about her daughter being older, so they could start coming around me, you know, to start trying to use me, borrow money from me. And I wasn't going for that. But anyway, and they told me their real age. And I was surprised that she was 16 years old. If I'd known that she was 16 years old, ain't no one in the world. I would never let her in my house, neither one of them. But anyway, that was my mistake when I let them inside of my apartment. Anyway, the 911 said they're going to send someone out right away, you know. But it took the police about maybe, I said about 15 to 20 minutes to get to my apartment. And by that time, they were still, I'm still trying to get them out of my apartment. And they were telling me, we ain't going no motherfucking world. No, they would call me all kind of motherfucking niggas and that, you know, just cursing
me. Okay, we on the radio.
Oh, I'm sorry. But this is what really happened. I'm sorry, please.
Okay.
But anyway, they would call me all kind of names. So about that time, I had my hand on my knife, but they didn't see my hand because my knife was under my cushion and under my wheelchair. Because I know they were fixing to kill me that night. I know they were. If the police hadn't come, they were going to kill me. So anyway, about that time, it was a knock on the door. And there was the police. And when I opened the door, the police walked inside my house. The police walked inside my apartment. And the first thing they said was, yeah, you did it. Yeah, you molested her. Yes, you did. I know you did. Just like that. They already had accused me already. Before I could even say anything, because I already told 911 that I had three white guys, you know, three people in my house. They were white. She asked me what color were they. I said they was white. And she was saying something about I was molesting her while she was asleep. I was on the couch with them. And that whole night, Miss Carrie, did no one in my apartment go to sleep that night. No one. We was up all night long. They were so high on that powder, they didn't know where they were. All they wanted was some money from me, because they know I had a little bit of money from making my model houses. So that all them people that she knew where she lived at, she could have went to anybody's apartment to stay. They picked my apartment because I live by myself. I'm in a wheelchair. And that kind of made me an easy target for them. Police came to my house, and they asked me what happened. You know, they already knew. They already going to say I did it anyway. That's the first word came out of one of them police mouths. Said that, yeah, you did it. We know you did it. So anyway, they asked Heather and Mike and Jacob to go outside, you know, where the other officers were. And they told me to stay in here inside my apartment while one officer was watching over me to make sure I didn't do nothing stupid, which I wasn't in no way. I was surprised that all this happened. And while I was waiting, some other police officer came in and said they want to, you know, swab my finger, you know. So I let them, because I was there by myself. I didn't know what to do. I was confused, and I had no idea what was going on. But that's how it all went down, just like that.
Okay. Now, first question, you know, that comes to mind is how well did you know these people? If three white people show up at my house, just for the record, I'm not letting them in. So
I knew them through her mother, because whenever they came to my house, they was always with her mother named Amy. They never came to my house by themselves.
Okay, so how long had you been knowing the mother and all of them? How long had you known Heather and her mother and all of them? How long had you known them?
I say about maybe 6 months.
Okay, did you know
the kids at all.
Okay, did you know these two white men that came with her?
I just barely, because when they came with her, that's the only time I ever, you know, met them, when they was all together. They never came to my house.
So would you say that night that you were considered to be held hostage?
Yes.
Okay. So you're saying they held you hostage, they assaulted you, and they threatened your life?
Right. And they beat me in the face.
Okay, and they beat you. Okay, that's right. They physically beat you as well. So were there any charges ever filed against these people?
No. They all set free.
Okay. Now, on this couch that you spoke of, where she said you sexually assaulted her at, how big is this couch?
It's just a regular size couch with three pillows on. It's not no real long couch. It's kind of like a small couch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, two people can take up most of it. Just two people by themselves would take up the couch just about by themselves.
Now, you say that you wouldn't have let Heather in had you known that she was 16. How old did you think Heather was?
I believe her mother. She said she was 20, then she 21, then 22. They just kept lying about their ages. And I found out that's all they did was just lie. They were just liars.
Well, then, why did the police officers, I guess I don't understand, why did they swab your hands? If she touched you and she had her clothes on, why would they need to swab your hands?
That right there, I really can't answer because they just want to know if I did it, what she said, because she went back and told them that I was molesting her. I was on the couch molesting her with all three of them on the couch. And that's impossible.
But I guess I'm unclear. If she has her clothes on and she grabs your hand and she puts your hand on her vagina, she still has her clothes on, right? So then
yeah.
what are they swabbing for?
The clothes that she had on, Miss, was she had clothes. I mean, she had holes all in her blue. She had some thick blue jeans on, and she had holes cut all in them, big holes.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess she had a big old hole cut between the crotch of her pants.
Mm-hmm.
You can't see it once you stand up. But anyway, when she's kind of squatted, like, forced my hand between her legs,
mm-hmm.
that's when I noticed that, you know, she had a big hole.
Okay. Got
right?
It was all
set up.
Okay. So how old were these men that was with Heather that night?
They between 20 and 21. That's what I heard.
They were between 20 and 21. Okay. During the time, how long did all this take place? I mean, you say this went on all night. We're talking about they came to your house about 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. So how long did it take before you were able to contact the police?
It was around right after 6 o'clock.
So they basically held you hostage, beat you, threatened you.
Yeah.
I mean, from 1:30 or 2 o'clock in the morning all the way until 6 o'clock?
Yes, ma'am. That's how it went down.
Okay. Were you able to scream for help, or were you just so in fear of your life that you were just afraid to...
I was scared for my life because it wasn't nothing I could do against
mm-hmm.
these people.
So you really did feel like your life was going to end that night?
Right.
Wow.
It was going to kill me if it wasn't for the police.
So how many? So who all hit you? Was it Heather or was it Heather and the men or who all hit you?
It was just her.
Okay.
So Mike already had said if I hit him, I'd go to jail. So they let Heather beat me in my face.
Okay, so they had they established in front of you that they knew if they hit you, then it would be like a worse charge than if Heather hit you.
Right. Yes,
okay. Wow. So how long has this been going on? I understand today is the 3-year anniversary from when this all happened.
It happened March the 18th, just for every day.
Okay, March 18th, 2008.
2008, right.
Okay, so that night, did they take you to jail that night?
No, they took me to jail 6 months later, maybe 7 months later.
Okay, why would they wait 7 months to arrest you for something, for sexual assault?
I really can't answer that. I really can't.
So they charged you with...
That's just the way it is down here.
Okay, so they charged you with sexual assault and assault with a deadly weapon, but they don't take you to jail that night?
No, this deadly weapon came up just a few days ago.
So you mean that, I'm sorry, so this happened, this whole incident happened 3 years ago today.
Right.
But they didn't charge, they didn't arrest you on this charge for 3 months, or seven, I'm sorry, 7 months after
seven
it happened.
Months. Right.
And that was just for sexual assault.
Right.
But then they didn't charge you with the weapons charge until 3 days ago?
3 days ago.
And what was their reasoning for adding a new charge 3 years later?
Because my lawyer was coming by, he was trying to get me to plead guilty. And I was, before that, I explained to him that what happened that night, just like I just got to explain it to you now. I told
mm-hmm.
him every detail, everything that happened. And I told him about the knife, how I did it. And that's how that came about.
Okay. So what is it that your attorney was trying to get you to plead to?
Guilty.
Let me back up then. If you didn't get arrested until 6 months after the incident, and at some point, when were you? So you got an attorney sometime after that. So from that point until recently, he's been trying to get you to plead guilty to sexual assault.
Right, but before I got him, I had two other lawyers.
Okay, so this is your third attorney,
right? They tried to get me to plead guilty, and they was lying on me, saying things about me that wasn't true either. So I had got rid of them, and I got another one. He did me the same way, tried to get me to plead guilty. And then,
okay, so if you had pleaded guilty, let's just say 6 months ago, you would have pleaded guilty to just sexual assault. But today, they're saying if you plead guilty, you're going to be pleading guilty to sexual assault of a minor and the weapons charge.
Right.
Okay. Is our legal analyst, Sharon Rainerson, on the phone? Ms. Cherry?
I'm here.
Is Sharon Rainerson with us?
I don't think so. She called me and said she wouldn't be able to make it, and it was too late for me to call you. So.
Gotcha. Okay. So how is it that they can add a weapons charge this much later?
Well, let me say this. What they were trying to do was get him to plead guilty, and they thought if they told him if he pled guilty to attempted aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, then they would convict him of that, and he wouldn't be convicted of the sexual assault. That's what they told him.
Okay. So then,
and let me say this: it's true that they only added that attempted aggravated assault with deadly weapon 2 days ago, and he did have at first he had Diane Sprague as his attorney, and they want to get him and I think scare him and make him plead guilty, but he. Always insisted that I be there. So she quit because she said that she couldn't talk to him alone and I was interfering, so she quit. Then they hired Ben Mazar, and he attempted to get him to plead guilty. They had this investigator that tried to get him to plead guilty, and so he wouldn't do it, so Ben Mazar quit. So they hired this Dan Meehan, and he spent the entire time trying to get him to plead guilty since he's had the case. And the other day he quit. Well, actually it was yesterday that he quit because he tried to, in my opinion, force Bobby to plead guilty.
So currently Bobby does not have an attorney?
Well, he does, because you can't just, oh, I'm quitting. You have to file a motion to be dismissed and go before a judge. A judge has to order it. And so what he did was he filed his motion blaming me, saying that I was giving Bobby false information, which the only information I gave was that he had a right to an expert witness. He had a right to not get on the stand if he didn't want to. And the attorney had told him that if he pled guilty, it wouldn't be a felony. It wouldn't even be a conviction, because he would get him to plead no contest. He had went over to Bobby's house and told him all of that, which was lies, because it is a felony that he's charged with, and it is a conviction. Even if you plead no contest, it's still a conviction. That you're sentenced just like any other. Case guilty in no contest or similar. Yeah. So since he couldn't do that, he got angry and he said that I was giving Bobby false information. So they've set up a hearing for the 22nd to go in and see if he's to be dismissed or not.
Okay. Let's go back to the 16-year-old, because we want to establish, first of all of this is really about, you know, in my opinion, a white woman saying that a black man touched her. That's what really the whole case, it appears, was about until recently when they added this weapons charge. Was it not established that this 16-year-old had drugs in her system and she was quite high the night that this all happened?
Yes. They did a drug test when they took her to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And she tested positive for, I believe, at least two narcotics. She tested positive. Her speech was still slurred when they took her up to the hospital.
Okay.
And she had cut the crotch out of her pants, and she had on no panties. And I'm going by what the police report said, although the police report made the claim that that she called the police, when in fact it was Bobby that called 911, because I have a copy of the 911 tape. And although Bobby is talking calmly right now on that 911 tape, he was frantic.
Okay. Bobby, let me ask you something. So So the 16-year-old, did she tell the police that she wanted to press charges against you, or did she tell them she didn't want to press charges against you?
She told them that she wanted to press charges against
you. Oh, she said she did want to press
charges. Let me clear that up. She did not. Some of the records I went and got through open records. So there's some things that Bobby hasn't seen that I have. She didn't want to press charges.
Okay, so she did not want to press charges.
Yeah, and so Bobby hasn't even heard the 911 tape, but I have. So, I just wanted to clear that up.
Okay, gotcha. Didn't her mother even say that she may be lying?
Yeah, she did. She said she's probably lying.
Who did she
lying.
Tell that?
She told that to the police officer who was interviewing Heather at that time.
Okay. So she tells she really doesn't want to press these charges. So who made her press them?
Well, I'm assuming that I think that Gary Young, he's the one that decides who's the district attorney. He's the one that decides whether or not a case is to go forward. Or he's the one that decides if he's going to indict somebody. So it was him, because the girl clearly did not want to do it. Her mother said she's probably lying. The police officer told her, "You're lying," you know. So yeah, I assume it had to be Gary Young.
Okay, and Gary Young again is the Lamar County District Attorney, who basically there's a current request for all of his case files to be investigated due to this type of railroading of people. It just seems like, you know, Lamar County has a lot of question marks on some of these convictions or in situations like this of Mr. Yates, and we just wonder how often this has happened. And I hate to talk about the young lady because she's 16, and a lot of times, you know, people will probably want to email me and say, well, you beat up on the victim, but I'm just trying to establish the character of this person. If a person is 16, first of all, why would she come to a – how old are you, Bobby?
51.
Okay, so if a girl is 16 and she's got, these white males with her, how old were these men, by the way?
One of them was the Michael Freeman. He was like 24, 25.
Oh, you
this
bet.
Jacob Wilson, who was her cousin, he was like 21, 22.
Okay. So why would these older gentlemen bring a 16-year-old to a 50-something-year-old, or you would be almost 50 at that time, man's house at 2 o'clock in the morning? Just to establish, like, you know, this whole scenario, why would they, I mean, even if they were in the rain, I just don't understand, if they didn't know him that well, why would this Freeman and this Jacob bring this 16-year-old Heather to his house?
Because people in wheelchairs are easy targets, you know, I think they figured they could manipulate him if they needed some money, and so.
Okay. Tell me about this 16-year-old. Someone said that there are provocative photos of her on the Internet.
Yes, she has a Facebook page, and she has, unless she's taken them down, but she has a Facebook page with provocative pictures placed on it. And bear in mind, she's about 19, 20 now.
About 19 or 20 now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Bobby, what would you like to see happen? I mean, you know, from the outside looking in, it looks like a case of, like, you know, where does this happen? But, of course, we know you live in Lamar County, so anything can happen in Lamar County. So, but what would you like to see happen? I mean, you know, you can't have a do-over, but what would you like to see the DA's office do in this case?
I would like them to turn everything around and put everything on them and charge them for what they've done to me and the hell they put me through.
So you were not, I mean, were you not able to just say, I want to press charges against these people that beat me up and held me hostage and threatened my life?
They weren't thinking about me. They were just concerned about her and those two guys. They didn't give a nothing about me at all.
Okay, tell me this. You said at some point they came back, the police department, the Paris Police Department, came back to your apartment for a second interview. When was this and how? What were they coming back a second time for? Or what did they tell you they were coming back a second time for?
Well, when that happened, just knock on my door. It was a detective police officer,
mm-hmm.
and I wasn't going to let him in because I was afraid, you know, that he might try and take me to jail that day. So, anyway, he said, like, if I don't open the door, Bobby, if I don't open this door, that he was going to kick it down and kick it in and drag me out. So I let him in.
Mm-hmm.
When I let him in, he had some papers with him. He got to showing me that this DNA and all this stuff, you know, that was on my hands, and
mm-hmm.
that I was lying, and he asked me what really happened that night. So I told him everything that I have told you tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole time I was telling and talking to him, he had a tape recorder on him, but I didn't know it until later on that he had recorded me. And everything that I told him, exactly what I told you, I guess it was a few months or some months went by before anybody ever heard this recorder of me. So anyway, the tape that he had of me was twisted all the way around. They had me saying, I think they edited some of it out and got me saying that I did it and all of this mess.
Well, let me clear that up. It doesn't say that. Bobby hasn't listened to the tape, but I have. And there are certain things.
I heard it one time, though, Brenda.
But they didn't. He's not saying I did it. What it's saying, the officer keeps saying, you know you did it. Tell me the truth. You know you did it. And Bobby's talking like he is now. And then there's a point where he said he was talking about them being in the kitchen. But there is a point where he says, I didn't want to do it. But I did it, or something like that.
Meaning that she grabbed his hand and...
Yeah, that's what he meant, but,
right.
You know, but that's what he's talking about.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I understand even this Denny Head, who's the Paris Housing, or he's the director, executive director of the Paris Housing Authority, even he has some knowledge of this 16-year-old girl. And how did he describe her?
What he said was... she's a sleazy old gal. I know her, and I know Bobby didn't do that. That's what he said.
Hmm. Creola Cotton, are you there?
Yes.
Miss Cotton, now they took your daughter from you in this same county because, you know, they said that, you know, she wasn't being parented right. Why do you think they didn't take this white girl from her parents?
Well, they just don't treat the black people as they do the white people, and... that's just how they do things here. I mean, but in my case, there was no bad parenting
mm-hmm.
at all. But you know, that is how they label us.
They tried to accuse you of like bad parenting in Shaquana. What is it, Shaquanda?
Uh-huh.
Shaquanda Cotton's case. And so, and anybody can Google that. It's another big story that's in the same county. Lamar County, but it's just, it seems like a double standard here.
Oh, it is. It always is.
Hmm.
I mean, you know, just like black children here. I mean, they're punished for just little of nothing,
mm-hmm.
and the white kids, they can just do things just over and over and over again.
Wow, Mr. Blackwell, what's the answer?
The answer is all the people in Paris have to come together and let them know that we will not continue to be treated like this.
Mm-hmm.
The case with Bobby is just an indication of how far Gary Young will go to try and destroy black people's lives. Gary Young is an evil man,
mm-hmm.
and he has no business in that position where he can control or destroy people's lives like he's doing just for his own gratification. But if we don't come together and keep this thing out in the open like this and continue to contact those in positions of authority that could exert some kind of pressure on Gary Young, then we'll never get the answer that we're seeking. But we're going to continue to work and stay vigilant.
Hmm. Okay, we're going to go to Mr. Drew X and see what he's saying tonight. Drew X, good evening. He's with the new Black Panther Party out of Dallas. Good evening, Drew.
Hey, how you doing, sister?
Fine, how you doing?
Okay, yeah, you know, once again, we come to this day of Parrish, Texas. You know, in Parrish, Texas, is a, Lamar County is notorious for corruption in the justice system. There's always been a bias of justice for the city of Parrish when the evidence shows, when you have evidence showing that white folks did something, the case go away. Now you have evidence not supporting the case of a black man, and it's been 3 years later. So we say we have some biased judgment going on in Parrish.
What tells you in 3 years this case has not gone to trial?
In my opinion, if a case hadn't went to trial in 3 years, there's not enough evidence to prosecute the case. And they stall around to stress you out to see if they can get you to take a plea bargain.
Mm.
And that's how they win cases. It's not if they get a conviction. If they get a plea bargain, that's called a win for Gary Young, who is probably a part of a three-ring circus, which is the police, the court, and the bail bond. So we need some type of investigation to look into these prosecutors. And from my investigation of Gary Young, he's not too bright. I don't know if you have to have a high school graduate or a diploma not to be a DA in Parrish County, because some of the stupid cases that we've seen do got to add up. I mean, when you have evidence, blood and hair up on the pickups, you let them go.
Mm.
Now, we have a man who's been accused of a crime with three white devils pop up at your house in the middle of the night. Anybody in their right mind would know there's three people there and a man in a wheelchair with no legs and other stuff didn't do sexual, don't even have a desire for sexual activity, didn't do this stupid crime. It's just another way of the three-ring circus, get some money, put people on bond, put them on probation. It's a circus. The corruption is deep.
So you feel that they have like a system in place down there between the bail bondsman, the court, the judges, the attorneys, the DA's office, and that's how they're stimulating the economy down there?
They're stimulating white economy and putting black folks in a depression and a recession.
But I mean, it does seem like the only people who have some job security work in criminal justice in Paris.
It's big business here. It's a big business.
It does seem that way. It does seem in some kind of way there's a conspiracy there to keep the system going, so they either trump up charges it's alleged that they trump up charges on people and railroad them through the system to keep things like flowing through there or something. I've never seen more charges that didn't really make sense. You know, that in a normal big city they wouldn't even stick. So it's just amazing that, you know, even in this situation, 3 years later, you know, or 6 months before they actually arrest him, and then, you know, you wait 3 years before you give him the second charge, which really should have been the more serious charge, it doesn't even really make sense.
Right.
And so I don't know,
like,
what about the statute of limitation on charging someone? Can you wait 3 years and say you charge him with a weapons charge?
Well,
you can't.
On different types of crimes, so I'm not sure of the statutes, but I'm sure going to investigate that to make sure they're not violating his rights. But he also has a right to his rights.
And you can get away with doing whatever you want to if you don't have anybody stopping it. And that's what happens. Gary Young is stupid. He's not intelligent. But you don't have to be if you have all the judges going along with whatever you do. You know, a 2-year-old kid can prosecute people here, you know, if the judge goes along with it. So
we want to mention too, before we forget, Drew X is a fellow Blog Talk host, and Drew is going to carry this story as well. What night is that, Drew?
Actually, tomorrow night. If your guest would be so kind to join me tomorrow night at 8 p.m., you know, you'd be on New Black Panther Party Radio. And we're a little different. We'll tell them how it really is tomorrow night. You can be black tomorrow night.
So you're inviting Jim Blackwell,
I'm
Breonna Taddeon, and Terry
Madness,
and Mr. Yates back to your show tomorrow night.
Yes,
correct?
If they would like to be on there. And
I would like to.
I would like to be there.
And Gary Young and all you cowards down there, we're going to let you know. This ain't over. Brandon McCullen case ain't over. None of these cases aren't over. We're going to get some justice. And if you don't mind, Sister Carrie, I'll make some announcements. On the 23rd of this month, we're going to have a national stand. Black folks all over the world going to stand out against 22nd, I'm sorry, police brutality.
Wow.
And next month on the 23rd, there'll be another national movement. We're going to start letting you crackers have. Oh, I'm sorry, that's Carrie's show. Wait, come tomorrow.
I think Drew thought he was on the new Black Panther Network.
Yes, I'm sorry, Carrie, Sister Carrie, I'm so sorry.
That's okay. So, people don't realize. We're laughing, but really it's a very serious matter in the case of Bobby Yates because, Bobby, we understand that after this happened, when this happened, you were living in some very nice townhomes.
Yeah.
And then we understand that you took a real beating from your manager. What is this lady's name? Miss Kimberly Revis?
Right.
We understand that Kimberly she started treating you like you were a stepchild and tried to evict you four different times?
Yes.
Wow. I mean, and what was her reasoning for wanting to evict you?
Because the police came to my house because what Heather had, said about me.
She didn't wait for the, I guess if she had waited, it would have been 3 years later before she'd even see it go to trial. But she didn't even bother to see, like, if you were guilty or innocent. She just already decided that she could evict you on
this?
She
was real hateful toward me. And plus, she was going around the whole neighborhood telling my neighbors that don't speak to me, don't have nothing to do with him because he's a child molester.
That almost sounds like a slander suit waiting to happen. I don't know that you can do that. As a manager of an apartment, can she do that?
Well, she did.
She did. You know.
But legally,
I don't think she
works for Ridgeview. I don't think she owns Ridgeview Townhomes, does she?
No.
She doesn't own it, but, nobody stopped her.
Okay, so was management ever notified, Kimberly's management, were they ever notified that she was saying these types of things?
Well, no, I never notified anybody about it.
I would suggest that the listening audience contact Ridgeview Townhomes in Paris, Texas, and tell them that Kimberly Revis did what she did, and that should not be tolerated, period, because I think really as a manager, I don't even know that you can divulge information like that from one tenant, about one tenant to another tenant. I don't think you can do that. That's just me thinking out loud, y'all, but I think about that. I don't know that that's even legal. And I know in a bigger city that would have never happened.
And let me say this. Not only did that happen, Bobby, somebody wrote die, nigger, die, and all kinds of move, nigger, and all of that on his on the outside of his unit. And he had called me, and so I rushed over there with a camera. And by the time I got over there, they were already trying to paint over it quickly. But I did get pictures of all of it. And she wasn't sympathetic with that. A friend of mine came to my house. He lives out there, and he told me she was going around telling people that Bobby was a molester and all of that. And, that's just wrong.
Okay, Bobby, let's do this, and I hate to go here, but I think in order for us to show the world, what we're dealing with in terms of what Paris, Texas is and just how bad this racism, how far it goes there, for them to even accuse you of being a child molester due to an accident that you had some 20 years ago when your legs had to be removed. I understand that there was an infection that took place in your body after they removed your legs.
I was shot accidentally, rabbit hunting accidentally, and I was shot in the back by my best friend accidentally.
Okay, so you were shot accidentally rabbit hunting.
Yes.
Okay, and then when you were shot, I understand that after that an infection took over your body?
Yes.
Okay.
Some years later.
How many years later?
About 7 years later.
Okay, so about 7 years later, as a result of that accident and them removing your legs, an infection took over your body. And I understand that part of your male anatomy area that had to be removed. So there isn't, if you want to, I'm sorry?
Almost died. They had to because if I hadn't had that removed, I would have died. I wouldn't be here now.
You wouldn't even be here. So they had to move your entire male anatomy area. Am I saying that correct?
No, just the penis.
Okay, just a bit. Okay, so they removed that. So technically, how can someone who does not have a penis then sexually molest anybody? And I understand that medically, when they did that, that caused urges as far as, you know, male urges for females or anyone else, that took that away. Is that correct?
Yes.
And I know that's hard, and y'all forgive me for asking this question, but I think we're having to establish this simply to show that they're charging a man with something that couldn't even possibly be true. I mean, and so that's the only reason we're going here, and I apologize, and but I'm only doing it in the attempt to show that Lamar County does stuff that nobody else in any other county would possibly do. No other DA probably across the country would have touched this in terms of charging this man with a sexual assault charge. So that's all I'm trying to establish. And Mr. Yates, I apologize for making you relive that. But I'm just trying to establish for those who are listening that that is the situation.
Yes, ma'am.
And, you know, that is one of the reasons that Bobby was trying to get this attorney to hire expert witnesses so they could explain all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And he refused to do so.
Okay. So his attorney did not want to hire anybody to help him.
No, he absolutely refused.
What is his name?
His name is Dan Meehan.
Okay, so Dan Meehan was repeatedly asked by Bobby to hire an expert, and he refused to?
Yes, so Bobby started writing him certified letters,
mm-hmm.
you know, asking him to do it. And then the other day he came over to Bobby's, and he just said he was not going to do it. He just, and I was there. He flat out said he's not going to hire anybody.
That's what he said.
So where does this happen at when you're dealing with an attorney who you're supposed to trust and you're believing that they have your best interests at heart and you're telling them to bring in an expert witness to tell these people that I couldn't even possibly do what they're saying I did, and then your own attorney tells you that he's refusing to do that?
Yeah, but you know, when it comes down to it, okay, it's a court-appointed attorney. They're paid by the state. They work for the state, and they're representing the state, not the client. Bobby, in reality, has no attorney. Dan Meehan only wants to represent Bobby if he pleads guilty. He doesn't want to represent him in a trial.
Okay, so he has decided that he knows what's best for Bobby. So if Bobby does not plead guilty, then he's out?
Well, I mean, he wants out. Will they let him out? I don't know. But he wants out. Bobby wants him out, so he should be out because he's angry. So, and he already said in his motion to withdraw that he cannot effectively represent Bobby. So that means if they keep him on, Bobby will not have effective representation.
Well, Bobby, let me ask you this. Do you feel that if he continues to represent you that you will get a fair trial?
No, I will not.
Okay.
Not at all.
So, you know, I can't imagine if he doesn't want to work for Bobby, if Bobby doesn't want him to work for him, why the courts would make them continue to have a relationship with each other.
Oh, that's what I want to know.
Well, we're going to find out. We're going to find out. Bobby, I'd like to ask you, too. So this townhome, let's go back to this Ridgeview townhome. So she attempted to evict you four times.
Yeah.
And I understand, you know, you fought it, or legal aid, this Sharon Reinerson helped you to fight that successfully. But finally you gave in and just decided that you were going to move. And why did you come to that conclusion?
Because it was something that she had wrote on my eviction paper the fifth time, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it had sexual assault, you know, and had me doing this and that to her. And I just made up my mind, I don't have to go through this no more. So I decided I'll just go and move out and just to get away from her.
Okay, so you move out. Did you go from where you live, which I understand the Ridgeview Townhomes was a nice townhome. Did you go from there to something better, or where did you go?
I went to something worse.
Oh, wow. Tell us where you went. I mean, how bad did it get?
I mean, the apartment that I lived in when I first moved here, it started, you know, spreading out mold everywhere.
Mm.
And I think about maybe a few months later, I had pneumonia from that mold, and I almost died from that.
Is this black mold?
Yes.
Isn't that, like, deadly?
Like water.
Okay. So I understand that with this mold, I understand that someone contacted the housing authority on your behalf because this is Section 8 housing, correct?
Right. Oh, this right here is just low income.
Low-income housing, okay.
I was on Section 8, but they cut me off of that and put me in the worst thing that a person could live in.
Okay, why were you cut out of Section 8?
Because where I'm at now, they call it, I mean, it's the project, you know, like projects.
But no, I'm saying they cut you off.
He was with the Paris Housing Authority.
Okay.
But before he was like with just regular Section 8.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still Section 8, but it's lower with the Housing Authority.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, so they put you in another place, and it's not as nice as the one you were in. And I understand there's a lot of drug dealing going on where you live now. And is that correct?
Yeah, it was, but now they done evicted all those people out of here. I mean, all that is gone now. It's quiet over here now.
It's quiet over here now. But what about the mold? Is the mold still present?
No, not in this apartment.
Okay, so they moved you to another apartment.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Reluctantly, it had to be. They had to be forced to do it.
I was forced
to move here.
Are you getting a backlash from that?
No, not at the moment. I'm not.
Okay, let me ask y'all: is there a petition or something being circulated for Bobby? What's the situation on that? Have y'all got a petition that people can sign? What are y'all doing?
Well, we don't have a petition for Bobby. We have a petition for all the cases together. We really need for the Justice Department in D.C. to come down and investigate. So, you know, if there's so many cases, you know, if we had a petition for every case, we'd be passing around 30, 40 petitions. But so we have one. And we have two, because we have one regarding the NAACP, local NAACP.
So, Ms. Cherry, am I understanding that two attorneys have quit, citing you for the reason that they're quitting?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And so is it because they don't want anybody down there telling anybody else how to better themselves? I don't know. I'm asking.
They want him to plead guilty, and they think I'm in the way of that.
Mm.
You know, but I don't think this incident couldn't have happened the way the girl said. It's impossible. The guy that is 6 foot tall, two people can't lay on that small sofa, because that's what she's claiming, that they were both laying on the sofa. It's a small sofa. He's 6 foot tall, and that Bobby jumped up on top of both of them and assaulted her. That's crazy.
Now, Bobby, you said the entire time that the door was open?
It was open the whole night, because it was kind of warm that night, just like it's warm right now.
Okay. So the door is open. Your couch is just an average-sized couch, and two of them are on the couch, her and another. Where's the third person at?
He was on the couch with them.
Okay, so three people
on the couch.
Yes, but some kind of way, with three people on the couch, you managed to get out of your wheelchair, get on the couch, and sexually molest her. So what were they doing while you were sexually molesting them?
I don't know.
What were they supposed to be doing?
They were just sitting straight up.
See, her story and his, she's claiming there was two on the sofa asleep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And with one laying
on
the floor. Bobby said none of them actually did that.
Okay, what I'm trying to establish is, what is the police's thinking in this? What were they thinking that these guys were when Bobby was supposedly molesting her on the couch? Are they too saying that they believe that three people are sitting on the couch and then a fourth person jumps on the couch and attempts to sexually molest the female and nobody wakes up to realize what's going on? Is that what they're saying?
Yeah, well, yes. They indicted him, and so I guess they believe it.
So, Bobby, did when you're talking to the police, are you explaining, listen, the couch is, you know, XYZ big, and these people are big, and so where's there room for me to do all of these things that I'm accused of doing?
I did mention that, but they still, they wouldn't take my word for an answer. They just have, what they heard from her, they just stuck with it. What I had to say, it didn't matter at all.
Okay. So I understand that that night, police found drugs on one of the men, but they didn't go to jail for the drugs? Is that correct, somebody? Did I hear that?
Well, actually, they said they found it where they were. So I don't know exactly what that means, but that's what the police report says. But, no, they didn't arrest any of them for any of the crimes. They committed about four different crimes, and they didn't get arrested for any of them.
Okay. So this Mike Freeman person, he was a friend of these two, because one of the males, Feather and Jacob, are cousins, and this Mike Freeman is a friend of them, theirs, I guess. So this guy, I understand, now is in jail on burglary of an automobile and drug charges?
I think they dismissed the burglary and just sent him in for the drugs. So he's in there for the drugs, I think. Because that's
so Bobby,
how they'll do sometimes.
Okay. So, Bobby, was it like known that Heather did drugs, or did you not know that she did drugs, or what?
I had no idea. They were doing drugs that night until they came in my apartment and saying they just had got through doing some sniffing powder or something, whatever they had. I don't mess with nobody that does drugs, smoke weed or anything.
Okay, now let me ask
that
you
was
this.
A long time.
So you don't mess with people who, you know, do drugs or anything like that?
Oh, no, I don't.
Okay.
No.
So are you just a super nice guy who's, like, a little naive or, because, you
oh,
know,
I'm
mean.
I'm not naive. I'm just real nice that way. I have Jesus in me, so that's where they come from.
You have what?
Jesus.
Oh, I'm saying, believe it or not, I got Jesus too, but you can't come in my house at 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning.
That was just a big mistake I made. That's my only mistake that I made, letting them in, because I was trying to help them out. I thought I was helping them out.
Okay. Because, you know, I think the average person listening will say,
I would never do that ever again.
Okay. And the whole thing about the brownies, the bag of the brownies.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if somebody comes to my house at 2 o'clock in the morning, they wake me up, and then they have the audacity to ask me to cook brownies, I'm going to think you lost your mind. So why, again, were you so nice and said, okay, I'm going to go cook y'all some brownies because y'all say y'all hungry?
I don't know. It just happened, you know. I just decided I was going to do it for them. I don't know why I did it, but I just did it for them.
Okay. I'm just asking because I'm sure other people are thinking the same.
Can I say this? I think that's how Bobby is.
And that's what I'm trying to establish.
Yeah, no matter who came, because me, nobody's going to come in my house at 2 in the morning, especially them. They wouldn't come in my house. But that's how Bobby is. It just, you know, he always tries to be nice to everybody. And you just can't be nice to everybody because people take advantage of you. But,
okay.
You know, that it happens.
It won't happen no more.
Okay. Listen, we're going to pray that you don't let it do it anymore. Because, Bobby, I'm understanding you said you were asleep on the couch, and then these three wet people come to your house, and they sit on your couch where you were sleeping. And so, I mean, and they're in and out, and it's raining outside, and you say that, you know, they're going outside, and they're coming back in, they're going. So your gut at some point had to kick in and say, okay, something's off here. You know, did you ever think at any point, let me just lock the door while they're out there and you know, or why did you just, you know, think that they were going, why were you thinking, again, that they were going in and out?
I thought they were just going in and out to see, you know, like, have our mother had made it home, you know, they were checking the door and coming right back, but
okay.
That wasn't the case.
Okay, so I'm sure if you could have a do-over, you would never open a door again for anybody to
ever
like
again. I learned my lesson from this. I'll never do this ever again. Right now, I don't trust no one no more.
Okay.
Not here in Paris.
Okay. So let me ask you, this whole weapons charge, I'm trying to still wrap my mind around, weapons charge 3 years later, what are you exactly charged with? What did you do?
I just picked up my knife and put it under my seat where I sit, my cushion that I sit on, and it just stays there.
Okay, so what are they saying you did with the weapon? I mean, well, first of all, let me establish that. If you come in my house and I want you to leave and you don't leave, I have every reason to get a weapon to ask you to leave. So I'm trying to establish, even if you said with a knife here, get out of my house, I want you to go, where is the crime in that, Lamar County? Make me understand how you charge a man with a weapons charge if he says that he's being physically assaulted, he's being held hostage, and he's being threatened. Tell me, where is the crime? I guess I'm just trying to, but Jim Blackwell, where is the crime?
Well, in Paris, Texas, black people have no right to defend themselves against white folks unless they're going to be charged with assault. You see, that's the way it is in Paris. And they can twist things around so bad, and all of them are in this together, that they'll make it sound truthful. Now, anybody with any common sense will know that you have the right to defend your property. They do it all the time. White folks do it all the time. They shoot and kill.
Yeah.
But you have a right to defend your property. Now, if Bobby just had the knife under his cushion for protection and the people who were in his apartment didn't know it, then there's no assault, I wouldn't think. You see, he never drew the knife. I said, if y'all don't get out of here, I'm going to cut y'all. He never did that. So I don't see where the assault is, just putting it under your cushion.
Let me say this. On the 911 call, he's saying, if y'all come back up here again, I'm going to defend myself. He says that. But I don't care if he had the knife out swinging it around saying, you come near me again, I'm going to cut you. He had a right to do that. Somebody assaulting you in your own home,
right,
I'd cut him, I'd shoot him if I had a gun, you know, because you have that right. But he didn't do all of that. All he said on the 911 call, if you come near me again, I'm gonna defend myself. That's what
right,
he said.
Right, so I don't see where the assault is. That's where I'm getting at. Yeah, you have the right to protect your property. He had the right to pull that knife out and actually use it. That girl had assaulted him. And you don't know what these other two drugged out dope addicts is going to do in your apartment and you there all alone. He had the right to pull that knife out and use it. They're just lucky that he didn't. And I don't see where the assault charges come in if he never even threatened them. Just saying, I'm going to protect myself, you have the right to say that.
But I want to go on the record and say, if he did, he had every right. I mean, here's a man who's
handicapped.
That's
what I'm saying. He has every right to do it.
Yeah,
you have no right to pull a weapon or say you have a weapon against somebody white. That's the bottom line.
So that's the crime.
We have two different societies in Paris.
Well, Paris, let me go on the record. I wanted somebody to explain the crime because we're not going to let you get away with this one or the sexual assault. But, I mean, especially the weapons charge, it doesn't even make sense. I mean, I'm just trying to make, like, okay, understand that, like, if I feel threatened, I mean, police, and I don't want to pick on the police tonight, but police tend to shoot people all the time saying, I felt like my life was threatened. So here's
right.
A man who was in his house with three people standing over him and threatening him, holding him hostage because they were holding him against his will, and one of them was physically hitting him, and he does not have a right to defend himself. Lamar County, y'all
need to. Paris, Texas.
Y'all going to have to do better. Say what, Mr. Beth?
Yeah, let me say this. Now, this is not the only case where there was a young black man assaulted by whites, and he wasn't allowed to file charges against those white people, you see. When he tried, they rejected him. They never even brought it up. And he was the one that was injured and went to the hospital.
He was stabbed.
It's just a double standard in Paris. You don't have the right. It's slavery.
I'm sorry, y'all have
got
so caught up in this show, I didn't even tell folks who tuned in late what the heck they're listening to. I apologize, y'all. I think I went in and forgot where I was. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Center Stage. We're talking to Mr. Bobby Yates about the fact that he's facing charges in Lamar County for sexual assault of a minor and aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. And technically,
Let me clear that up.
He's being charged with, I'm sorry, say what, Ms. Terry?
Let me clear, is he's being charged with aggravated sexual assault.
Yes.
of a child, and then he's being charged with attempted aggravated assault with a deadly weapon.
Okay, let's stop. Okay, wait. He's being charged with aggravated sexual assault of a minor, and then he's being charged with
attempted aggravated assault with a deadly weapon.
Okay, that's what we're dealing with tonight, y'all. And this can only happen in Lamar County. I mean, things like this only happen in Lamar County. Mr. Yates is due to go on trial this coming up Wednesday, March 23rd, 3 years from the date. Well, today is 3 years from the date that this happened. Why are they just now taking it to trial? Why is it that it's 3 years this week that they added the second charge? Why is his attorney deciding at the last minute that he's no longer going to defend Mr. Yates if he doesn't plead guilty, or what is he actually to plead out and just plead guilty and never go to trial? I mean, this kind of thing just does not happen anywhere but Lamar County. I'm just sorry. I listen. I talk to folks from around the world, and I've just never heard of stories like this. And so I think what they're asking for down in Lamar County is that the DA, Gary Young, be investigated. All of his cases that he has convicted, all the convictions that he's had, you all are asking that they come in and look into those. Right, Mr. Blackwell?
That's correct.
Okay, so tell me, let's establish what you all are trying to do. You all went to the FBI headquarters the other day, and you all asked for what?
We took cases there that will clearly show that there is racism and discrimination in the criminal justice system that is causing our young people and our black men to be judged and sentenced more harshly than anyone else. And it is a pattern that we are showing. They wanted us to show a pattern. Now we have the pattern. Now you go in and do what you're supposed to do. Gary Young does not represent law enforcement. He represents the roughnecks, the aggressors. His intelligence is questionable, but that's the way he operates. He operates off of aggression and intimidation. And that's not the way you run a justice system. But the criminal
justice
system is ran by criminals.
And Gary Young is Lamar County District Attorney.
That's correct.
Okay. So how many cases did you all take to the FBI headquarters?
Ms. Cherry?
We've got at least 20.
The count is 20.
Well, around 20. I would have to... And that's not even the juvenile ones. We didn't take the juvenile ones yet.
Okay, so this is crazy. So I'm sorry, it's just even hard to wrap my brain around some of this. So you took 20 cases that have been tried under Gary Young and said all of these are questionable?
Yes.
Okay, all of these people have already been convicted?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, actually, like the case of Donald Stewart, it was a case where he was over at a white woman's house and five white people came in and called her a nigger lover, and they beat him and they stabbed him. And in the end, they refused to let him file attempted murder charges. He tried, but they only arrested two of them. And, you know, he ended up in the hospital and he survived the attack. But in the end, they gave one of them deferred. I think he pled to a misdemeanor. He got deferred adjudication. And then the other one that actually did the stabbing, they dismissed it. And so.
How do you dismiss someone who stabbed someone?
They did. Because we had a meeting down with the chief of police asking him, why wasn't this charged as a hate crime because they were calling her a nigger lover, and why wasn't it attempted murder? And at the time he said, well, because they're going to charge him with burglary, because they came in without permission, burglary of a habitat with intent other, which they said was a higher crime.
But and I apologize to those that are on the phone line tonight. We only had an hour and a half on this show, and Mr. Yates is due to go to trial on the 23rd. We absolutely needed to put all of this information out there in order for the world to know how crucial it is that they get involved with Mr. Yates' case. So we did not have time to take phone calls tonight simply because it was just too much information to go over and then – kind of bounce around with phone calls. So I do apologize for that because we're not doing a two-hour show tonight. We're only doing an hour and 30 minutes, and we only have 10 minutes left in this segment. So we had so much to cover because the story is just so unbelievable, and we wanted the world to hear every single detail of just how ridiculous this is. And we did not want it to not be said before this man goes to trial. So we want to go on record and give Lamar County an opportunity to do the right thing before they send this man, you know, away for a while for something that they know he could not have possibly done. It's just, I mean, again, you know, I can't wrap my mind around just how ridiculous this all sounds to me, and I'm sure to anybody else that's listening. And so, you know, we've taken an hour and 20 minutes, and we're just getting, you know, to all the details of is there anything else that I missed on this case? Because, I have all my notes in front of me, but did I miss anything else, Bobby, about your case that you'd like to mention?
No, right now I think everything has been said.
Okay. So
can I just say one thing?
Yes.
In Bobby's case, you see, they do not want to go out and hire a professional to come in and testify on his behalf, but in the Brandon McClellan case, they went out and they found somebody to say that they may have hit Brandon. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They don't do that for black people.
Okay. So they bring in an expert with, or they find people for cases where they want to get someone off, but in a case like this where they're trying to convict a man, they don't have the resources, I guess, or whatever, to bring in expert witnesses?
That's correct. That's what they'll say.
This case is not going to go away, Lamar County. We're not going to let it die. We want you to know if you all convict Bobby Yates on this case, the world is watching. And there is going to be such a media blast this week on the Bobby Yates story, and there's a lot of interest already. We sent out the press release, as you know, Gary Young, we sent you one, and the world is watching. So I suggest on Wednesday, when y'all go to court, I guess, you know, you all have the time, I know, to fix this, make it right, you know, meet in your dark rooms and come back with, let's just let this guy go because it's not worth the trouble. Because believe me, it's not going to be worth the trouble if you all convict Bobby Yates for something that y'all know he didn't do. Because this one is just going to be too obvious to the world that this is going to be a wrongful conviction. So if y'all don't want another Shaquanda Cotton case,
yeah.
Then I suggest you all do not convict Bobby Yates. Bobby, is there anything you want to say to the world? We're down to our last 7 minutes about this. You want to ask them for their help? What do you want?
I would like for someone to help me, and I want everyone to believe that I'm innocent and that I didn't do it.
Okay.
And
okay.
I wish everyone would pray for me.
Okay, our prayers are with you, Bobby. Yes, as a matter of fact, everybody, if we can't do anything for Bobby, pray. And we can make some phone calls. We can call the Paris County District Attorney's Office on his behalf Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Flood them with calls and ask for justice for Bobby Yates. Drew X, tell them tomorrow what time you're going to be covering the same story on Bobby Yates, just in case they didn't get all the details from us tonight. Drew X is going to be covering this on his show tomorrow. Drew, what's the name of your show?
Southern Region NBPP, and that's at 8 p.m. tomorrow night, our time, Central Time, for anyone that's listening out of town. And we will be, like I said, helping the brother in this issue. And please pass my phone number, Sister Carrie, to all the guests. And 8 p.m., we will also have Hugo, Oklahoma, on, too, because they're just 20 minutes away from you guys. And we will tie the correlation of this injustice in that whole area of what's going on with the police. I ain't going to say too much more because I'm about to say cracker.
Okay. We really have a lot to cover. I'm just going to go to one phone call, but I want you to know, can you tell me in 60 seconds, whatever it is, because we still have a lot of information to put out there. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Hi, Carrie. This is Nancy Lockhart. How are you,
Nancy?
Carrie, Bobby. Hi.
Bye.
I just wanted to say that I made a call to Lamar County today, and I was told that Bobby's trial would be on Wednesday. I called. It was suggested that I call the courthouse. I called the courthouse, and they said that, they left me a message. I wasn't here when they returned the call. Everybody was very pleasant, I must say. I'm surprised.
Mm.
I'm working on a petition, and I'd like for Ms. Cherry to review it before I post it.
Okay.
There's also a Facebook page, Justice for Bobby Yates.
That's wonderful.
I spoke with Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., who is Fred Hampton's son, president of PLCC, Prisoners of Conscious Community, and he is prepared to mobilize people to get there for this Wednesday.
Ooh.
I believe we all agree that the more people that could pack the courthouse there, can't make any promises myself, you know, but I think that the more people that pack the courthouse, maybe they will continue this and get, you know, give Bobby time to secure decent legal representation. I spoke with Mr. Wendell Lee. I'm not sure. He's in Memphis, Tennessee. I can't remember the name of his organization. Sorry. Mr. Lee has contacted an attorney and will have something definite from the attorney on Monday. That attorney is in Texas.
Y'all, that's Miss Nancy Lockhart. And if you ever need somebody to help you in a fight, she is the sister to call. Thank you so much, Nancy.
You're welcome.
That's Nancy Lockhart. She is on Facebook. For anybody who wants to get with her, she is definitely a freedom fighter. We'd like to thank our guests, Mr. Bobby Yates, Brenda Cherry and Creola Cotton with the Concerned Citizens for Racial Equality, Jim Blackwell with the Tarrant County LOC. We'd like to thank you all for being with us tonight. A reminder, all the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage host. Also a reminder, tomorrow, March 19th, from 3 to 5 p.m., our guest will be diet guru, comedian, and civil rights activist, Mr. Dick Gregory. If you have any civil rights questions, that would be the show to call in on. Also, March 26th, from 3 to 5, we're going to have Creola Cotton, Brenda Cherry, and Mr. Jim Blackwell to come back, and they're going to be telling us about exploring all these convictions that have been under Gary Young's watch. That's the DA down in Lamar County. We got to look into all of them, all these injustices that they just talked about that they took to the FBI headquarters this week. We're going to talk about them. That's a show that you don't want to miss. Thank you all so much for tuning in tonight, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.